This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are here as very special guest, the one, the only, all Francine Hardaway all the time. I first of all want to thank you for participating in our year-end summary. I know that the short answer, you know, give me a quick this, is very much out of character for you, but I thought it would be an interesting stretch, and we very much appreciate it.
I answered every question with Martha McSally's dog.
Yeah, well, and there are a lot of dog lovers out there.
I know.
As Martha McSally figured out, she probably got more positive vibrations from that than any of the commercials she ran.
She should run her own campaign.
Well, those folks who ran her last one did not do her a service.
They really didn't.
According to Chuck, she's re-upped with them.
Well,
I don't get it.
She's wrong. Yeah. Maybe she listens and she'll hear me.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. They should listen to you. You're one of my favorite deep thinkers in the world.
I've been here for 50 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't.
And you're the youngest person I know.
I don't even have to be a deep thinker. Yeah.
So, me too. I want to talk to you about this. I have no idea what you're going to say, but I know it'll be interesting.
Oh, my God. My positions on Me Too are so nuanced and complex because.
Hey, we got an hour.
It may take the whole hour.
I mean, I think of you going back to the Mad Men era in the 50s in
Mad,
New York.
I started working at J. Walter Thompson in New York in the early 60s.
That's Mad Men.
Yes. And it was exactly the Mad Men era. And I had, you know, two Ivy League degrees, and they made me secretary. Because it was incredible to get an advertising job for a woman in New York, and you started as a secretary.
Mm-hmm. So you were the girl.
I was the girl. That's right. I was the girl there, and that's why I kept on going back to school, and I ended up with a PhD. And once I had a PhD, I decided, I probably could work anywhere, so I thought I'd work in Arizona for a year. This was the summer of love. And
did we have one of those here?
No, but, you know, it was everywhere else. And I moved. I didn't know we weren't having it here. So I moved out to Arizona and I started college teaching. And so I taught all the women's lib, women studies, you know, women in literature, all of that. I taught
probably the first round of that.
I taught the first round of it. That's exactly right, where you had to go find the books and you had to figure out what to say about the books. So I deep thought about women's rights and women's, quote, liberation, unquote, for a long
when nobody had done it before.
That's right. No, that is exactly right. I also had two children and refused to quit. The community college wanted me to quit teaching, and I kept on teaching. I kept on teaching till I was in labor, literally. And the deans were horrified. They kept thinking something was going to happen and I would go away, but I never went away. Well, I finally got bored with teaching and I started a business. And when I started a business, I fought the women's rights issue in another way. I was the only woman in every room, and my firm was the first company was a PR firm. So I was the PR gal. So, you know, as the PR gal, you get your butt grabbed from every angle they can possibly reach. And I was the only woman in every business meeting. And I began to capitalize on the role of the woman. In other words, if this was how it was, which was what I had seen on Madison Avenue and what I had observed even in campus environments, which I thought would be different, but they weren't, and what was happening now, I was going to find a way to play that. So I became everybody's daughter for a while. You know, all these older men who ran Phoenix, I was their daughter. And I let them give me advice and do all kinds of things. And I did get a lot of what would now be called harassment. And most of it, basically, I ignored. So this gives me, and it's interesting because fast forward, you know, 40 years, and women won't put up with this stuff I put up with. it started with Anita Hill. But, you know, I was stunned about that because I was like, well.
You were stunned in that you're surprised that they made an issue of it?
Or yes, what? Because, you know, I was.
Nobody had?
I was so used to taking it for granted. I took it all for granted, and I played it. I played it for everything that I could. Sorry, guys who are still alive that I worked for. But I seriously knew what I wanted. I wanted to build a business, and I built it.
And you did. You were the largest PR firm in town.
Yes, I was. And then, of course, I went from there. When Intel acquired my firm, I went to Intel. And Intel, of course, was all younger guys. And so then I couldn't be the daughter anymore. So I was like, who can I be? Okay, I can be the mom. So I played the mom. Anyway, right to now, when we got to Me Too, and I realized, and I brought up two daughters. There's that. And what I said to my daughters was, if you don't want sex, don't go to the guy's apartment. You know, don't be alone with the guy. And if you do want sex, fine, go do what you want, but then don't complain. So I had this attitude. And when Me Too came along and I realized how many women were being taken advantage of in Hollywood, which I kind of knew was happening, but I actually thought those women were doing what I did, making a choice. You know, you make a choice, sleep your way to the top. That's a choice.
And that appears to be some of it.
Yes, exactly.
And then there appears to be other cases which are downright coercive.
Exactly. I mean when somebody locks the room,
That's not voluntary anymore. Or, that's a whole other animal.
Or gives you drugs and you can't get out. Yeah. So these were things.
And that's where I had trouble with the Kirsten Gillibrand response saying, you know, it's all the same. No, it's not.
It's
not all the same.
It's really not all the same. You know, Matt Lauer locking the room is not the same, or Bill Cosby giving women drugs.
That's the extreme.
Right. Yeah. That is not the same.
As making a pass at somebody,
and the person says, you know, this is worth participating in or this isn't. Yeah. Because I always thought women had agency. Mm-hmm. And I hear a lot of women saying now that they don't have agency. And a couple of good friends of mine in the tech industry got caught up in the current version of the Me Too movement. Because, you know, in the tech industry, everyone goes to conferences and everyone, you know, does drugs and drinks at the conferences and stays up late and all that kind of stuff. Not me. But I had been to a lot of conferences where these guys were. And in fact, I'd gone around the world traveling with one of them. And I had never seen any bad behavior on their part. But of course, other younger women saw a lot of it, and they basically got thrown out of their positions in the tech industry. And I felt, as their mother now, I'm on the whole other end of this, I'm like, that was way too harsh. There's got to be a way that men and women can talk to each other and that they can do business with each other that doesn't make... That gives a woman agency over her body, which is really what this is all about, and gives a man an opportunity to be a man, which I feel men are kind of, you know, scared now. And there may be a huge backlash.
The feeling, oh, geez, can I even say that?
Totally. I think it's Mike Pence doesn't have dinner with a woman unless his wife is there.
Okay. Which at point can be limiting for the woman. Well, it forecludes bonding and opportunities for discussions that you could otherwise have.
Well, that's right. There's a whole lot of things that if a woman feels that she has agency that a woman can do with a man, and I'm not talking about sex. I'm just talking about
like hanging out at the men's grill and the Phoenix Country Club.
That's right. I mean, I wanted to get into the men's grill at the Phoenix Country Club when I went into business, and they wouldn't let me. And I was so furious about that I was part of a 35-year campaign to desegregate desegregate or whatever the men's grill that finally, long after I left Phoenix Country Club, that finally prevailed.
They finally prevailed, but I don't remember when it was, but it was awfully late in the game.
Yes, it was. It was very late in the game. But my thought is that Me Too has lost all of its nuance. And it needs to be, we need to be more nuanced on these issues.
Okay, you've opened some questions here that we will follow up when we return in the next segment. We'll continue this discussion in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We'll move to other topics in our next segment, but you've opened a can of worms here with Me Too, suggesting that we need no more nuance. Want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, here I switch to the male point of view, in which, I mean, of course, no one should have the opportunity to have sex with someone who doesn't consent. That's rape. You know, and there's
that's why I say it is not all the same.
Right.
That there's a hard line there, and that hard line is consent. On the other side of
that's
consent,
right.
You've got a lot of things that
of groping and stuff that used to happen and be, you know, like, oh, or even construction workers. Some younger women have told me that they don't want construction workers catcalling at them or saying things to them. Why not? I mean, my feeling about that
is, give them the finger if you don't like it.
It's harmless.
Right?
It's totally harmless. Speaking of that, I was once running on the canal in Arizona at like 6:30 in the morning with about four or five women. And there was a guy exposing himself on the canal, which was common, you know, in the 80s and 90s. Well, I don't know. I saw it several times. But the pack of women that I was running with just said to him, put it away. We're not interested. Now, that's women with agency.
Yeah, yeah. It's also more than one at a time.
It's also
the absence of fear.
Of course.
You know, and all that.
Of course. But we have asked men, and I don't know, most of the men I know are intelligent. So I don't know what's out there in the grand scheme of things. But of the men that I know, all of them have been asked by their significant others to evolve into more equal partners in their relationships and their marriages. They do more childcare. They do more household things. They do a lot more than men used to because, of course, men used to not be asked to do anything around the house because that's what women did. Now women go out and work, and so it's evolved to be more equal. Well, if that's true, then shouldn't it be more equal here too? I'm telling you, my view on this is very complex and constantly evolving because I don't know what to say to younger women because I'm not in their position anymore, you know? Yeah. And when I was, I really didn't have any choice.
I think what I'm hearing you, the inference from what you're saying is, if there, and we're not talking about over the line coercion or something like that. If somebody makes a,
we're talking about casual gestures.
Okay, somebody does something you don't like, you say cut it out. If
right.
They don't cut it out, then they can and should be held accountable.
Right. Right. Exactly. But I don't think you can expect a man to know what to cut out before.
Until somebody tells you.
You've told them where the boundaries are.
Yeah,
because the boundaries are different in every single instance of male, female.
Well, the difference is there's an advance and there's an unwanted advance. And it's hard
to
tell. It's hard to tell what something is
until
it happens.
I'll tell you, if I were a guy, I would be totally freaked out now. You know, it's like, how do you know what's an unwanted advance?
Maybe that's why there's Tinder.
Maybe that's why there is, because
it's a safe place.
That's right. But I believe that people like Harvey Weinstein, who used a great, and Donald Trump, who used their power, there was such a difference between their power and the younger women that they basically overpowered. Those people should pay some penalty for what they've done. but in a couple where the man and the woman are in the coffee break room in the workplace and they're kind of equal and, you know, the guy says something that the woman doesn't like, the answer is for the woman to exert some agency.
Basically, and say, cut it out.
Exactly.
Back off.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't fall all to the man. It's just like birth control shouldn't all fall to the man. These are two-way streets.
That's an evolved notion because that used to be absolutely what was expected.
Well, I understand, but, you know, we're moving toward a society in which women want more equality. Mm-hmm. And if you want more equality, you have to act more equal. You have to, like, step up.
In the absence of that, somebody has more power.
Yeah.
Because you've
you
given
leave
it
a power vacuum. That's right. So exerting agency means there's no power vacuum.
Okay, so if there's a power differential, what about Bill Clinton?
Oh, that is a case where there was a huge power differential.
Absolutely.
Huge. Mm-hmm. And what he did was awful. And at the time, I was a Democrat. And I'm not, you know, a conservative, but I thought it was absolutely awful. And if you look at this woman's life since then, oh, my God, her life has been nothing but this. She never had a chance to have a regular life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she did think he loved her. That was her. Yeah. That was so crazy. Why?
I think the evidence was she started out with an intent to bag the president.
Seriously?
Yeah. That she initiated. Now, he shouldn't have acted on that. But
she initiated it. Yeah. She was an intern.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah. And there is a huge power differential, no question.
Yeah. Well, if she wanted to bag the president,
She didn't know what she was getting into.
She didn't, that's
emotionally.
Right.
All right. We'll be back with Francine Hardaway on other topics in just a moment.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we're back with Francine Hardaway. A couple of topics here. One of the most intriguing ones to me is the question, all right, what do we want in the next president? I have a theory about that, and it is the following. We pretty much always want the opposite of what we just had. So what do we have in Donald Trump? We have somebody who is just kind of off the wall. It's all Trump all the time. Totally contentious. We're gone to war with one another. I think we want the anti-Trump, and I think I know who that is. It's Uncle Joe Biden. Make everybody feel good, you know, other than the age thing, which is the same, more or less. What do you think?
I think we need totally new leadership. I think we are in a completely different country than any of these, you know, old white guys know anything about. I like Joe Biden. That's not the issue. But the issue is we are in a country.
I'm saying want, not need, by the way.
Oh, I'm talking about what I want.
Right.
Because I'm me.
Okay.
So what I want.
And by the way, I wasn't saying what I want. I'm saying what I think the country wants.
Yeah.
The appeal of Joe Biden is that he is the non-Trump. Okay, he's the anti-Trump.
Okay. Definitely the anti-Trump. But that's just a given. That's no positive characteristics. That's just a negative. What I want is someone who will understand that the entire nature of warfare has changed from tanks rolling into streets in other countries to cyber warfare and the kind of thing that has happened in the 2016 election.
Which is the undermining of democracy from within, not only in the United States, but look at Great Britain, France, Germany. I mean, essentially.
Exactly. You know, the leaders are ill-equipped to lead in this society, okay? Obama was semi-technically literate, but I believe that we need First of all, there's a question of whether anyone can govern a country that's as messed up as ours is and as divided as ours is. But if that person is going to have to be somebody who will really listen to what millennials have to say about what's coming in the future and will not just say, we need to save the institutions. Sure, we need to save the institutions, but we need to do that in a new context. Because we used to be able to afford things we can no longer afford. We're going to have to be able to shift money around like we've never done it before. And we're going to have, you know, the next president is going to have to deal with aging baby boomers who totally want entitlement programs and young millennials
who don't want to pay for them.
Well, they might or they might not. They just want something that they think they'll, at the end of the day, get something from, you know. So I don't see any of the current old man or old woman or whatever.
It's mostly old men.
Yeah. None of those are what the country needs or wants if the country is made up of those two segments, you know, market segments.
Well, the segment that I think as part of this mix is you've got roughly 40% of the country that is just dyed in the wool, Trump angry. And it seems to me you're never going to get all of those people, but you need to get at least a chunk of them to buy in to cut down on the division.
Why? What you need is to get people to come out and vote. Mm-hmm. You know, you need the people who represent the future to come out and vote for it.
Oh, those folks can be beaten in the, but if a significant chunk of them aren't brought in, then we still have warfare in this country. We just have a different.
Okay, so maybe
party.
We need a Latina man or woman as a presidential candidate.
Which
younger one?
Interesting, but all those angry old white guys will be see that
there
as
aren't
the,
enough of them
aren't enough of
to
them.
Make a difference.
So you just outvote them.
Yes, yeah. What you have to do is outvote them, and you have to outvote them by giving people something to vote for. You know, I mean, I think we're ripe for a very radical, you know, dismantle the Pentagon and put the money toward healthcare and education type of candidate.
Kind of the Eisenhower speech. Every tank that's built,
yes.
It's a hospital that's not built.
Exactly. It's totally the Eisenhower speech, and Eisenhower wasn't radical at all.
Yeah.
But he was right.
But you probably need somebody of that ilk to do it. You probably need somebody with a good military background
okay.
to make that case credibly.
Mad Dog Mattis.
Yeah. Yeah. Or somebody.
Yeah,
somebody
well,
that
right.
can speak credibly to the issue and to say that we are not leaving ourselves at mortal personal risk by doing so.
Exactly. That's what I think about what we – and the people who say, oh, we want a woman, yeah – I'd like to have a woman because I think women look at things differently, but I don't want – it's the same position I was in with Hillary Clinton. I don't want Elizabeth Warren either. She's not different enough and not hip enough. We need somebody who is hip to the rate of change that's really happening. The pace of change has picked up so enormously over the past 50 years. Mike, I grew up with a rotary phone.
Me too.
Well, I know. So it's completely different. And you can't lead unless you understand what's going on in the society. And that all has to do with technology, which all the people in politics are woefully ignorant about. Almost all of our society is.
I don't think we're about ready to turn anything over to the Google people or the Facebook people. They seem to be part of the problem now.
Well, yes and no. There are people who were at Facebook and were at Google who could be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to flesh those people out and put them in positions of leadership, the ones that are now running not-for-profit organizations on things like technology and humanity.
Because mm-hmm.
We need a whole completely different political class. We have an entrenched, entitled political class that does not understand the environment it's trying to govern in. And that's a, you know.
And you're asking, though, people not in the system to go to, into that quagmire and be subjected to what anybody running for elected office will. I mean, that's a toughie.
And that is the problem. So maybe they don't become subjected. Maybe what we do is we make the next person who wants to be president, you know, literate enough in change.
In those things.
Yeah, because, again.
Because somebody comes from a high-tech background, they made some money. You go into politics, you know the first thing they do is they're going through your entire personal history.
Yeah.
And they will find something
and
that they can vilify. And,
right.
And they're really good at it.
And no technology person wants to expose herself or himself to that. You know, it would be interesting, for instance, to have Bill Gates be a candidate just because he understands what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And he's smart enough not to do it.
Yeah. Well, they're also, you know, they're all smart enough not to do it. But that's what we need.
But he could find somebody who
could. But we need or find a candidate who is willing to listen to a cabinet full of people who have that expertise. Yeah. And it's a person who doesn't keep saying, I would have been a great general. Yeah. I know more about technology.
Yeah. Well, that to me is Trump's biggest failing, is the failure to recognize there's always somebody smarter in the room who has more knowledge than you do and listen to you. Listen.
And the gift about older people is not what they know now. It's being able to listen to younger people about what they don't know.
And to sift that through
and
experience.
To sift that, to have the filter.
Yeah.
An older person should be a filter for
the wealth of experience is worth something. You don't know everything,
but
you're better at processing things.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And that's what we need as a president, is somebody of whatever sex or party. Mm-hmm. I think the parties are useless now.
But they're entrenched.
Right.
Know? I mean, they're useless. Dysfunctional, but they are there.
Right.
And you, I don't see anybody busting that.
But we don't need we don't need a white president, black president, you know, woman president, man president. We need a competent president, and that involves a lot outside the current political arena. We're coming toward a world in which we may not be working anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that and cutting, you know.
And the biggest driver of that right now is the driverless vehicles.
Yeah.
One-sixth of the economy is people involved in transportation. That's a threat to that. And it's probably not a stoppable nor necessarily a good threat, but it cuts down the need for labor.
Right. It cuts down. The statistics on the number of people who drive for a living are unbelievable. So there's going to be enormous dislocation. Mm-hmm. The same thing, and not just on the low end like truck drivers, but on the high end like doctors, because the rate at which healthcare is changing and going toward the use of artificial intelligence is going to mean that certain categories of physicians are going to go away. Mm-hmm. And that's that, and nobody ever talks about that. No candidate, no nothing. And it's all coming at us within the next 10, 15 years. It's not that, and you couple that with climate change. You know, climate change, another big issue, and especially in Arizona, the water issue. What are we supposed to be doing? No politician has anything to say on any of these.
All right. We're going to see what you have to say on the water issue when we return in just a moment for a final segment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, final topic with Francine Hardaway. It's probably one that is incredibly uninteresting and boring until we get to a crisis situation, and that's water. We take it for granted until we have none of it. We dealt with this once before. 1980, Groundwater Act was considered pathbreaking at the time.
Well, it was, because Governor Babbitt took all the constituencies, the tribes, the farmers, the developers, and locked them in a room and said, compromise. And we came out with a really good compromise in which we have these two active management, three active management areas, but two of them in the metropolitan Phoenix and Tucson areas. And those people had to plan, the two active management areas had to plan for how water would be saved and used. It's very interesting because it's changed a lot. Tucson went to complete desert everything and tried to.
It is demonstrably different when you drive into Tucson. You see desert landscaping.
That's right.
You rarely see.
Nobody in Tucson plants grass. Mm-hmm. In Phoenix, everybody is like, oh, well, Salt River Project, that's irrigation, that's cheap water, tertiary wastewater, we'll just do all that. We'll use the technological fix. And they kept on, this active management area kept on building golf courses and building developments. But what we did was we got rid of a lot of farmers and we changed the land.
And when you change a farm to suburban, you get a big plus on water.
That's
farms
right.
Farms use a lot more water.
That's exactly
acre.
Right. So we basically threw out the farmers except the Pinal County farmers. And now the Lake Mead was supposed to reach drought level in 2026. It is apparently going to reach drought level next year.
And drought level means we get no more water, right? It's below the pipes.
That's right. The Central Arizona Project can no longer supply us with water. So that's a horrifying situation.
How much of our water is that? Any idea by percentage?
I don't know, but a very big percentage. No. Right.
You know, I listened to all that and I said, well, there's at least one fairly obvious and not all that catastrophic solution that Phoenix has, which is we switch to the Tucson model and we say, okay, no grass. Now that might, you know, that might be a pain to a homeowner who's got to convert, but it's really not life changing.
That's one model, mm-hmm. but there is in this whole thing, which is very complex and which I don't pretend to understand the whole part of. I just remember that at one time, certain communities bought water ranches like Scottsdale.
Scottsdale bought water ranch somewhere else. They had the
Planet
water
Ranch.
Rights.
That's right. Communities bought water rights. And in the active management areas, we all, if there's a development, they have to prove that they have a 100-year assured water supply.
Which can mean that they have the rights from somewhere else.
Totally. Yeah. Well, then what happens, the problem that's having now is that this happened so long ago that most of the officials who did it are no longer around. And we don't even know how to access our water rights. So that's going to be the big problem. Yes, we had water rights, but we don't know how to get to them because they take certain infrastructure like pipelines. How are you going to get the water from here to there? And who's going to pay for the pipelines? So the fact that, you know, that we're going to run out of easily available CAP water means that
there may be water somewhere else, but there's no means of getting
it. We're not going to be able to get to it. That's mm-hmm. right.
Got the rights, so bring your buckets down there and take all you want.
Yes, exactly. That's and where the hell is Planet Ranch? You know what I'm saying? And the city of Phoenix, I guess, has been banking groundwater, has been banking water for a long time because it has been planning for this. But they are the ones who don't have the infrastructure.
Are you talking about legally banking or physically banking it into
groundwater. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the infrastructure to get to that either. So there's going to be a come-to-Jesus issue. And the Sierra Club has an article. I hate to refer people to an article in the Sierra Club magazine, but there's an article in the Sierra Club magazine that basically says that during climate change, you can't just keep cranking up the air conditioning because there's more things at stake. So we are all going to sit down, and 6 years before we thought we were going to have to do it.
Which means basically now.
Basically now, we are all going to have to sit. We're in a crisis. I mean, we live in a goddamn desert, and nobody wants to realize that. And for some people,
we will have to edit this interview.
I know. So, you can bleep out. I just can't believe that people don't care because there are cities in the world that have become, you know, that have run out of water. Cape Town, South
Town,
ran out.
They got temporarily reprieved. They had some storms, and they're good for, again, for a little while, but it certainly suggests
that we're going to have to think on a year-to-year basis and not a 50-year to 50-year basis.
And one big rainstorm is not going to fix this.
No, I can remember when I was everybody's daughter, as we said in the first segment, a guy named Gary Driggs owned Western Savings, mm-hmm. wonderful man, very committed to the community and the future of the community. And he had in a guy and invited a bunch of, you know, community leaders mm-hmm. and the PR girl to watch a climatologist. Now, who knew what a climatologist was?
In 1970.
In the 1970s. But Gary Driggs, and, you know, he was a futurist. And so he got this climatologist in. And the climatologist basically said, you know, this is what's going to happen. This climate is going to change this way. There's these scenarios. If we hit the drought and warming scenario, we're going to have this issue with water. And he gave a whole bunch of scenarios. And the Phoenix community leaders sat down and tried to think about what to do. Well, the one thing that they have never done is discourage economic development and discourage factories and, you know.
We've been at economic, you know, remember the whole thing in the article in the 1980s, Phoenix is a one industry town and that industry is growth. We've been worshiping at the altar of growth, and that means building more stuff and let somebody else figure out how we're going to sustain it.
Exactly. Well, there's a ton of things we could do if anyone had any long-range thinking. And I can remember that in the – you might remember this, Mike. In the 80s, during the real estate recession, mm-hmm. when we realized, oops, we might have to diversify, we basically had a futuristic town hall situation where any volunteer who wanted to participate could help develop the future of Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And – that's, you know, that's where.
This is Terry Goddard's Futures Forum.
This was Terry Goddard's Futures Forum.
I remember one funny incident that I was involved with some of the efforts to bring people into that. And then I made some reference to that. I was running a focus group and I made some reference to that. And somebody said, oh, that's one of those Phoenix 40 things. All these people try to exclusively just control everything. It's like conspiracy. And I laughed because of the effort that he went through to expand participation. In
right,
that.
Exactly. But people don't want to volunteer and they don't want to think. And Phoenix is not going to be habitable if we don't start thinking.
Ah, on that happy note, we're done. We're cooked. Go ahead.
Can I talk?
Yeah, real quick.
No, I'm...
We've run out of time with Francine Hardaway. We'll see you next week in the Think Tank.